Romans chapter 13, Paul is writing to the Roman Christians. And it's good for us to remember this. And I'm going to give us a little bit of gory history to help us get a graphic understanding of what he is dealing with here. He's writing to the church in Rome in approximately the year 58 A.D. All right, all the dates I'm going to talk about this morning are A.D., so we're in now 2013, and that was 58, so a long time ago. But he was writing to the church at Rome in A.D. 58. And Nero was the wicked emperor on the throne at the time. And I'm sure that most of us know very little about Nero. We may know that he was not a nice guy, but we don't know a whole lot about him. But I want us to understand a little bit better so that we can more rightly apply the instruction that God's giving us here for us this morning. Nero's parents were both of evil, ungovernable tempers and immoral character. They were not good people, his parents. His father died when he was 3 years old in the year 40. And in 49, his mother remarried, but she remarried her uncle. And the reason she remarried her uncle, who already had another wife or two, was because he was the emperor of Rome, Claudius. And she wanted nothing more than for her son, Nero, to become the emperor. And so she married Claudius, pulled some strings there and enticed him to marry her. And in 50, she encouraged him to adopt Nero as his son. So by this time, Nero was just a young man and early teenagers by this time. And in 53, when Nero was 15 or 16, it must have been 15, he married Claudius's daughter, Octavia. And she was also, like her father, not a good person and ungodly. And his mother had Claudius poisoned to death. So the emperor, his wife that he just married, this Nero's mom, she arranged to have poison put on some of his food and poisoned him. So the emperor's dead. Now Nero's going to be the king. Nero's going to be the emperor because he is now the son of the emperor, Claudius. And Nero also had another boy of his own. And Nero's mom did everything she could to push him down, and keep him out of the sight, and so that Nero became the emperor. So now Nero's the emperor, and in 55, Nero then murdered Claudius's son to prevent rivalry. All right, so he had him murdered, the other boy, the other young man, so that he would not try to take the throne from Nero. And in 59, just a few years later, Nero had an evil mistress. And she was a wicked, wild, evil woman. Her name was Poppaea. And Poppaea killed his mother for him. She arranged to have Nero's mother killed because she was getting in the way and causing problems with some of the advancement of what they wanted. And so Poppaea had her killed. And then Nero, shortly after that, married Poppaea. And she plotted then again to have Nero's other wife killed, Octavia. So Octavia's dead now. And so you can see the wickedness in this, all these plots and these murders in this wicked, wicked family. And so at the age of 16, Nero's the emperor of Rome, and he's already married. And he's now got, you know, just a few years later, he's got this other girlfriend. And then he marries her, this Poppaea. He married her, and she kills his other wife. And then on the 16th of July in 64, so this was only how many years after? About 10 years, 9 or 10 years after he became the emperor, Rome burned down. And more than half of Rome burned to the ground. And all the evidence points to Nero being the cause. But he denied it, of course, and he blamed instead the Christians. And he blamed Christians, all those who put their faith in Jesus Christ, he blamed them for burning Rome. And as a result, persecution exploded. And the Christians were massively persecuted during this time, and many of them lost their lives as persecution mounted extremely. to add to the wickedness of his life, there's other things we could look at as well. But one other thing, this wicked woman, Poppaea, that he had married, she was pregnant in 65, and he, in an angry fit of rage, kicked her, and she died. And so he was a wicked, rotten, immoral, godless, pagan of an emperor. Now, it was this emperor that was on the throne when Paul was writing. And Paul was writing to the church at Rome in 58. Right, so it was before Rome burned, but it was after a lot of these other atrocities took place, and after all these other murders and plots, and it was all in this boiling steam of all this when Paul was writing to the church at Rome. And as we begin looking at this morning, I want us to notice that God was giving the church at Rome instructions on how to conduct themselves, or how their duties toward their government. What was their duties toward their government? And as we look at what God tells the church there at Rome, we can learn some things from this that will help us to know how we ought to respond to our government. Now, thankfully, our government is not quite as evil and corrupt as that of Nero. Heading that way, full speed, but it's not as corrupt and wicked and rotten as it was then. So, with that in mind, if God told the people of Rome, this is what I expect from you under this kind of a rotten government, then we ought to be able also to put those same things into practice ourselves and say, well, if God expected that out of them, then he certainly expects it out of me. So as we look at that and keep that in mind this morning, let's look at some of these facts that God gives us here in Romans 13. Beginning with chapter 13, verse number 1, we'll read 1 and 2. Verse 1 says, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is not a power of God, there is not a power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation or judgment. All right, now, what is God saying here? God is requiring them that they submit to the government. Submit to the government. Now, God makes the need of submission very clear. He didn't make it kind of maybe. He said, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. Every soul be subject to the higher powers. Now, God expects all of us to submit to the government. Now, in our hearts we think, but the government's rotten. The government was rotten then too. And he said, we're to submit to the government. And Paul reminds us that God himself appointed the government. Notice there, he says, there's not a power that be that is not of God. God ordained government. Now, it doesn't mean that God is supporting their character. It doesn't mean that God is saying Nero was a great guy. It doesn't mean that our government, the leaders, are necessarily good, wholesome people. Doesn't mean that. But God supports and instituted the institution of government for our good. And we're going to see that. And so God is encouraging us to submit to the institution of government. Now, if we oppose the government, God said we oppose him. We see that in verse number 2. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God. So he says there, if we are going to resist the government, we're really resisting what God has placed there for our good. And so he says, don't resist the government. It doesn't justify the evils of the day do not justify us to resist the government. And God says here that he will judge those that oppose the ordinance that he has ordained. Now, on the other hand, you think, well, wait a minute. What about Peter and John? Remember Peter and John back in Acts chapter 5? They were summoned by the government and told to be quiet, no more preaching in the name of Christ. What did they do? Well, they said in chapter 5, verse 29 of Acts, he says, and then Peter and the other apostles answered and said unto them, we ought to be God rather than men. So, evidently, God is because his power is above civil power, If the civil government tells us to do something that God says don't do, or they forbid us to do something that God says do, we're first of all to submit to God, and secondly to submit to the government. Now, it's important for us to see it in the right proportion. Let's take the example of abortion. The Bible makes it clear that abortion is murder. All right, I don't think that any Christian that's reading the Bible carefully and accurately can deny that. But as long as the government does not make abortion mandatory, we cannot justly fight against that. Now, we can lawfully oppose it, but we cannot rebel against it unless they say you must. All right, so if the day ever comes, like in some nations of our world, where they say you can only have one kid or two kids, and if you have any more than that, you're going to have to abort them. Well, then that comes time to, we're going to have to disobey God, because God said abortion's murder. But most of the time, most of the laws of our land, even in a wicked society, most of the laws are not forbidding us to do what God wants us to do. Now, there may be some. There may be some. There's probably some in our land right now. In fact, I know there are some lands in our land right now that if you're a Christian and you follow the letter of the law, you're not going to be able to obey God. So we're going to have to be careful to draw the line accurately. But you know the thing that, and honestly, I tell you this up front, I don't have an answer for what I'm going to bring up right now. I don't have an answer, and I'm not sure what the answer is. You know, if the government if an evil government overthrows a country, is it wrong to fight to defend freedom? That's a tough question. I mean, in my heart I'm saying, fight for freedom! But at the same time, what did God just say? He said, submit to the government. So I'm not sure about that. And then I think back, well, what about my ancestry in America? You know, the Americans in the Revolutionary War fought against England to get their independence. And we have had worldwide evangelism and religious freedom like never before because they gained independence and became a nation under God for many years that was doing right and propagating the gospel. Now, was it wrong for my forefathers to fight against England and become independent and to do that? I don't know what the answer is to that. Honestly, I don't. And we'd have to do a lot of praying about that. And I don't know all the circumstances. I wasn't there. Maybe they were demanding some things that God specifically said don't do. I don't know all the nitty-gritty things of the situation of the day. But there are tough times like that. And so, when we find situations like that, there's nothing wrong with us saying, I don't know the answer. I don't know. Now, God knows what's right, but I'm not sure I know what's right in those kind of situations. But most of us aren't caught in that situation. That's one of those hypothetical situations that we're not caught in right now, so let's not worry about the hypothetical. Let's just take care of the right now. It's easy to get ourselves stuck on that and say, well, you know, I don't know about this, and we forget about what God did tell us to do. All right, so let's get back to where we are today and what God does want us to do and what we know He wants. And so He says, first of all, that we're to submit to the government because God ordained it, and it doesn't matter what the powers are, God's not necessarily saying that Nero was great and Nero wasn't great, or our government is great and it may not be great, but God's saying government in itself is ordained of me. And I want you to submit to the government because I ordained the government. Now, God ordained the government to curb evil. Verses 3 to 5. God ordained the government to curb evil. Verse number 3. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power to do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same? For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore, ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. So as we look at this, what is God telling us? He's reminding us, first of all, that rulers oppose evil. Now, we can look around our world and say, well, yeah, but I know some rules that they are not opposing evil. Well, that's true, but as a whole, government opposes evil. And if we stop and think about that, we know it's true, but sometimes we forget that they are promoting good and they're trying to quash evil. That's what government's all about. No matter where you are, government is there to promote good and quash the evil. Now, government, for example, it helps to keep us safe. If we didn't have government, we didn't have any police, we didn't have any courts, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes, you wouldn't dare leave your home. I mean, as soon as you drove down the street, somebody would be back in it, bashing in your back door and taking everything you got. And you get home and say, that's not right. Why not? I wanted it. You know, there's no government, no law, and you can do what you want. So government does help to keep us safe. Right? And our government does help to stop dishonesty. Now, there's a lot of dishonesty in the government, but the government does help to stop dishonesty. I mean, we do have courts of law that do sometimes pass good judgments. Maybe not always, but they are there. That's the purpose of it, to help to defeat dishonesty and stop the dishonesty. It also helps to promote transportation. You know, we have government. And, you know, if we didn't have any government that was taking control of the transportation part of our world, and you say, well, it sure be nice to get to Perth faster than walking, you know, and there's no roads, you know, I got to drive my car over the bumpy old lanes to try to find my way around. And, you know, but they've built us highways, they've built us trains. We've got, you know, things like that that the government helps through our tax dollars, and we'll talk about that later. But the government is helping with our transportation. We also are aided in sanitation. You know, we don't think about that a lot of times, but you turn the tap on and you got running water that's kind of clean. You've got, toilets and things to get rid of the waste so that you don't have disease and problems like in a lot of countries where, you know, they don't have that. And the gutters outside of their house are full of flies and rats and maggots and all kinds of grossness. And there's sickness and there's disease because the government doesn't care. So we do have some benefits we need to be thankful for. Government is there for our sanitation. And overall, the government is there for our good. There's a lot of good things the government does. Now, we all may oppose the government and some things that they do. Yeah, they're not perfect. But at the same time, there is a lot of good that the government does. Now, God tells us here, and he reminds us, that if you do good, that the government will praise you. That's true. I mean, they may not come and knock on your door and say, congratulations, you've been really good this year, we're going to pay you $100. Now, they may not do that, but the idea here is that you will not be harassed by the government for doing good. You know, you do good things and kind things and helpful things and do right and obey the laws and do all the things you're supposed to do, and you will be praised and are honored by at least not getting in trouble. So there's good things that do take place when we do what is right. And so God says, do right and you'll enjoy praise. But he says if you do evil, you need to expect punishment. And God uses civil government to bring about the punishment for doing wrong. It's important for us to see that. Now, the word that he uses here in our Bible is the word wrath. And the word wrath literally means angry punishment. I looked up the word and I thought, whoa, this is interesting. The main definition means angry punishment. So God's saying here that if we do wrong, we can expect angry punishment from the government because God has used the government to deal with the problem and to take care of this situation so that there'll be angry punishment for what was wrong. You know, and we see, as we see the deterioration of these things in our society, it causes problems. So God reminds us that rulers oppose evil. Now also, God gives us two more reasons why we ought to obey the government. Now remember too, when did government start? When did human government start? Genesis chapter 9, right after the flood. All right, right after the flood, God said, now we're going to have something new. By man's hand, if man sheds blood, by man, his blood will be shed. All right, so God said we're going to have capital punishment. If you kill somebody, you're going to be killed by those of the family or those who are in the government has got the right to put you to death for what you did. And so there's capital punishment. The government begins to have authority over us. And so it all began way back there in Genesis chapter 9. And God gives us these two reasons here. One of the reasons, verse number 4, we see, and he is a minister of God. This is talking about the government leader, the civil leader. He's a minister of God to thee for good. And but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is a minister of God to revenge, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Alright, so God's telling us here that he's using the government to execute this wrath. And so therefore, God's saying here to avoid punishment, this angry punishment, obey. Alright, there's another good reason to obey the government. So God first of all tells us just submit to the government because I said so. Then he said submit to the government because if you do, you'll avoid punishment. Then he gives us another reason and he says that in verse number 5, wherefore ye must needs be subject not only for wrath but also for conscience sake. He said, here's another reason, is because if you do right, then your conscience will be clean. You'll have a clean conscience. But when you do wrong, the Spirit of God, if you're a Christian, will convict you and haunt you until you get it right. And so he's saying, listen, the solution to that, if you don't want the Spirit of God convicting you and you don't want your conscience haunting you, then the right thing to do is to obey the laws of the land and all will be well. You know, as Christians, we ought to be the best law-abiding citizens of the country. We really should. But you know, many Christians don't do a very good job. And we make excuses and we justify things. For example, we ought to obey the speed laws of our land. And there's a lot of Christians that have no concern. As long as they don't get caught, who cares? And God says we ought to obey the speeds of the laws of the land because that's a law. Another one is the tax laws. You know, we ought to obey the tax laws of the land. Whatever they are, we ought to obey them. And that's what God expects of us. That's what he wants. We ought to obey the copyright laws. You say, well, who cares? And nobody knows, and it doesn't matter. But it does matter. There are laws. I mean, if it didn't matter, they wouldn't have the law. I mean, you know, sometimes it frustrates me. I don't like it. You know, you get even a lot of songs that I'd like to have us learn to sing. You know, I could print them out or I could put them up on the screen, but I can't do it legally. And so it's frustrating. And you think, oh, you know, but at the same time, I understand there's two sides to it. I mean, if you don't make a copyright on it, then everybody else, somebody else will grab it and print it off and publish it and make money on it. And the poor guy that did it gets nothing. So the crook that stole it from him gets all the pay. So I understand there needs to be those kind of things. But we need to be honest about that with our music, with our software, with our the things that we have that are copyrighted. We need to be careful about that. Also with the parking laws. That's why we got Rob back there to keep everything in line with the parking laws. All right, but that's another law. You say, oh, I don't like paying, you know, parking fees. Well, I don't either. That's why I don't park in those spots. Go someplace else and walk for a half a mile to get there. But that's the law. We might not like it, and I don't like it. But that's not, it's not my choice. It's still a law. Then there's even the water laws. You know, the law says, oh, you can water 2 days a week. And a lot of people think, oh, who cares? As long as nobody knows, nobody turns me in, I don't care. I'll water whenever I want. It's in my backyard and I can do what I want to do. Well, it doesn't make it right. We still have to obey. I mean, you can hold the hose all day long if you want to. But we need to obey the law. So all of these things, these are just the kind of tip of the iceberg of the things around us that Christians ought to be a prime example. We ought to be an example for the world around us of what is doing right. So, God's answer is, you know, that you can have a clear conscience, you can avoid punishment, and you can please me if you obey the laws of the land and obey the government. But then a third thing I want us to notice this morning is that God requires Christians to pay taxes. Someone has said, people who complain about taxes can be divided into two categories. Men and women. And, you know, nobody likes paying taxes. We've probably all heard the statement that the only two things that you can know for sure in life are death and taxes. And, you know, taxes are not one of my favorite subjects. I don't like taxes any better than anybody else likes taxes. But God says we're to pay our taxes. Look at verse number 6. For this cause pay ye tribute or tax also. For they are God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute or tax, to whom taxes due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Now, God's telling us here that taxes, first of all, he says, are to support our leaders. And it is true. I mean, they may abuse it, and they may, you know, live on a fat salary that they don't deserve. That's not the point, but it still does pay their wages. And it does still provide water for us and transportation for us. And it provides the other benefits that we get and we enjoy and take for granted in our world. They all come from our taxes. And so God says we ought to pay those that do work for us. That is one of God's basic principles in the Bible. We see this over and over again in the Bible. Luke chapter 10 and verse number 7, Jesus said the laborer is worthy of his hire. And so if a person works, he deserves to be paid. And so part of that which we are paying in our taxes is to pay those who are working on our behalf to provide all these services that we enjoy. And so God says we ought to pay it. Thomas Constable in his commentary reminds us that government workers are indirectly God's servants, and we should support God's servants. Individual rulers may be unworthy, but the institution is not. Governments cannot function without incomes. And that is true. The individual rulers may not be worthy. And Nero, for example, was certainly not worthy of any of their tax dollar. He was not a worthy character. He was a very unsavory guy. And maybe you can look at our government and say, oh, our government's corrupt and our government's doing this and they should be doing that and they wasted all that money. Yeah, they have. But that's not the point. God says, it's not my problem. God will settle some of that stuff. But my issue is there's a tax. I am supposed to pay it. And it does render benefit to those who are helping on my behalf. Now, while no one enjoys paying the taxes, we need to have a good attitude about it and remember that God wants us to pay it. And that'll help us greatly if we can remember that the leader's wages come from our taxes, the benefits come from our taxes, and all of these things that we enjoy do come from our taxes. And so that is a help as we contemplate that. Now, taxes are a debt. We saw it in verse 7. He says, render to all their dues. Render, therefore, to all their dues. The word due means it's a debt. It's a necessity. It's something that has to be done. Now, what did Jesus think about paying taxes? Well, the subject came up a few times in his ministry. One time, the people came to Peter and said, hey, how come your master doesn't pay taxes? Or does he pay taxes? And Peter said, well, let me go ask. So he went and talked to Jesus, and Jesus said, listen, Peter, go out, get your fishing hook pole and go out and throw the hook out in the water, and the fish you bring up, you open his mouth and there's going to be a coin in there. You go pay our taxes for us. Now, that was, I don't think we can expect that on tax day. We can go out and, throw a fishing hook in the line and say, all right, God, you're going to have to put a big coin in there. I got a big bill today. I don't think we can expect that. But God did show through that he did pay the tax. Jesus did pay the tax. He didn't say, no, I'm not going to pay the tax. He went on to explain to his disciples that it wasn't, that you really should get the taxes from somebody other than the king's children. And so he indicated there that he was really exempt because of who he was, but he would pay the tax anyway to keep people happy. So he did give us a good example. But then there was another time when people came and cornered Jesus. Remember, toward the end of his life, he was just about to the cross. And they cornered him. They're asking him all kinds of questions. And they came to him in Luke chapter 20 and verse 22 and says, is it lawful for us to pay tribute unto Caesar or no? Ha! We got him now. Jesus, is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar, the big man over in Rome? We don't like him. And if Jesus said yes, they'd say, he's not a very good Jew. If he said no, they'd say, we're going to turn you into Caesar. So they figured we got him either way. What's Jesus say? But he perceived their craftiness and said unto them, why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. And whose image and superscription hath it? And they answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. So he says, it's a Roman coin. Well, pay your tax to Rome with your Roman coin. And the things that belong to God, you pay to God. And so he was not saying we should not. He was saying pay your taxes. He defended that. Now, we are to give or render, as the text may say in verse 7. It says, render therefore to all their dues. We're to pay. We may not like the tax, but if it's required, we need to pay it. We need to pay it. It's wrong for a person to smuggle goods into the country without paying customs on it. And I'll be the first to admit, I don't like paying customs tax on anything. But if they say I owe them tax on it, I can't fight it. And it's wrong for me to try to deceive them, to trick them into thinking that it's something that it isn't so I can get it in without paying tax on it. It's not the Christian thing to do. Now, I can pray that they'll overlook it, or I can pray that they'll not see it that day, or they'll be busy and they'll push it through. But I can't hide it or be deceitful, because that's not right. Now, it's wrong also to claim, you know, not to claim work on our taxes. You know, sometimes people work on the side and say, I'll pay me in cash and I'll just not tell the government about it. That's not right. It's not right. If we're working, we need to pay tax on what we've earned, because that's what the government expects. Taxes may seem unjust. They may seem too high. But that doesn't justify civil disobedience. God said we have an obligation to render all their dues. Now, he goes on and he says something strange. He talks about two other kinds of dues, or taxes, if you want to call them that. He says, to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom is due. And then he says, fear to whom fear is due, and honor to whom honor is due. God says here that fear or respect and honor are also a type of tax that we owe to those above us. We owe them not only the tax, but we owe them honor. We owe them respect. You know, I don't think it's right for anyone, especially a Christian, no matter how bad the government is, to blast them or call them names or run them down or say wicked things about them. Now, it doesn't mean we can't talk honestly about the government and say, all right, there's some problems here. Our government is not right. They're corrupt. They're doing wrong things. But to defame a person who happens to be in a position, it's not really right. You know, and I know that there's a lot of Christians, and even like in my country, in America, there's a lot of people that, you know, say bad things about our president. Now, he's not a good man. No question about that. But we still need to pray for him. We still need to honor him. He's still the president. He's still the man that's on the, you know, at the top of the leadership. In the same way in our government here. You know, we've had bad governments and good governments and some in between. And, you know, and you may not like the government, but we still need to pray for him. We can talk about it amongst ourselves and voice our disagreements and things of that nature, but we need to be very careful that we're not dishonoring or disgracing or belittling them in some wrong way, because God says we have a debt to fear them or to respect them and to show them honor. And that's not very easy to do sometimes. But God tells us that's what we're to do. So, again, as we think back, and always keep this in perspective, is it'll help us to remember, 58 A.D., Rome. You're living in Rome with all these Roman Christians throughout the city. The government is wicked as wicked can be. Nero's on the throne. He is a murderer. He is a conniver. He is immoral. He is ungodly. And just a wicked, rotten leadership. And yet, Paul writes to them and says, submit to the government. Submit to the government. Even though it is bad, even though it is ungodly, we need to submit. And so as we look around us in our world today, we have no excuse not to do the same today. And if the Christians in Rome could submit, then we also cannot justify disobedience to our government. We need to obey the laws of the land, whether we like them or not, We need to do what is right and to do our best to be law-abiding citizens that honor and respect the government that is over us. And I know that sometimes it's not easy. But God said, you know, God said that's what we're to do. And so let's ask God to help us to be the kind of example that we ought to be in obeying the government. Even when we don't like it, even when it frustrates us, it seems unjust. If the government is not telling us or forbidding us to obey God, then we cannot justify disobedience. Now, the day may come when they say we cannot worship God like we're doing today. If that day comes, then we will have to disobey. We will have to meet in secret and have our meetings in secret places. And it won't be easy. And you know, there's communist countries and other countries that are struggling with that even today. It's not easy. But until that time comes, and until there's laws that say you cannot, we need to obey the land and do what we can. And when there's areas that they say you cannot, then we need to just say, well, I got to obey God. But let's ask God to make us good law-abiding citizens for His glory. You know, if you find it extremely difficult to, or nearly even impossible to do this, then really what we need to do is we need to take a look at our own heart. Because perhaps the problem is a lack of personal relationship with God. You know, just because a person says they're a Christian doesn't necessarily mean they're a Christian. And some people that say, I just can't do that. Well, God says we can. So if you really, truly can't, then there's something wrong inside. And you need to have a look at your heart. Make sure you really know the Lord is your Savior and you're on your way to heaven, because that's where it has to begin. We need God's help. We're going to have God's help. And things are not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. And so we need God's help to obey the government, to be the right citizen, to do the right things. We need God's help. So let's let God take control. Make sure you know Him as your Savior. Make sure you're walking with Him and ask Him to help you to be obedient and to do what's right for His glory and honor.